wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Hello, and welcome to the show. We're joined here in studio with our expert, Professor Alan Blackman.
wouldn't go that far.
Kia ora, how are you going this morning?
Oh, yeah, it's not too bad. The weather's a bit grim, but
yeah,
you know,
it's anyway. On and off. It seems to be sunny and then rainy and then sunny and then rainy. I can never keep up with it. Anyway, we've got a few cool stories today. I thought we'd get started with this Mars Orbiter one.
Yes.
It's a bit more complicated than that, but I was having a read. It looks quite interesting. You want to tell us about this one?
Well, I'm always a big one for anniversaries. And today just happens to be the anniversary of the Mars Climate Orbiter. Now, people listening who are of a certain age, probably older than you two, I'd say, would probably remember this. This was all down to units, the importance of units and what we measure things with.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we measure time in seconds and we measure length in meters.
Yes,
and
I was reading, you know, there was a miscalculation here.
Oh, come on, you're giving it away.
I'm getting straight to the point.
You are. I was going to take the long way.
Oh, yeah. The scenic route.
Anyway, okay, so the Mars Climate Orbiter. So that was a spacecraft launched on December 11th, 1998, and destination Mars, obviously from the name. And the plan with this, again from the name, was to orbit Mars. There we go.
This makes sense.
And during the time it was going to orbit Mars, it was going to sort of measure some atmospheric data, and it was going to also act as a communications relay for other spacecraft on the surface of Mars. And ironically, the one that it was going to do crashed as well, but we'll get to that.
That's all right.
So, for a mere $327.6 million in those days, that bought you a spacecraft about the size of a very small car, sort of a couple of meters, and everything. And so, all was going well. It took about its 9 months to get to Mars, and it was on the approach to Mars on the September 23rd today, 1999.
Yep.
And so it was approaching Mars sort of obliquely. So it wasn't coming sort of straight down. It was coming in sort of on a tangent to Mars. And so the whole plan was that it would come in a tangent and then it would fire its rockets to slow it down. And so therefore it could then get to orbit Mars, okay?
Yeah.
Now, so what happens was that, yep, the engines fired and everything. That was all good. And then 4 minutes later, they lost contact with the spacecraft. And they couldn't regain it. And then 2 days after that, they just said, oh, okay, so it's gone. It's a total loss. And so then begins the investigation, of course.
Yeah.
And so the investigation. So what they found was that when it was approaching Mars from a tangent, it was coming in a lot lower than it should have.
Right, okay.
Okay. So all you calculate now, I mean, just the amount of calculations that have to be done to get a spacecraft from here.
Yeah, I can
to
imagine
Mars,
that's quite a complicated
just
process.
It boggles the mind. You know, it's just ridiculously complicated. But we've got extraordinarily intelligent people who do all of this stuff, you know, and they write the programs, do all the calculations, everything. However, so what was happening, it came in too low, basically. And as a result of that, one of two things happened. Because it came in too low, it hit the atmosphere where it was thicker than it should have. And as a result of that, it either just bounced off and just ended up in deep space somewhere, or it just burned up in the atmosphere.
Yeah, okay? Right.
They're not sure what exactly happened there. But they did know that it was coming in too low. So then the question was, why was it coming in too low? So they went back through absolutely everything. And they went back through the software that did all his calculations. Okay. So the calculations for the thrust, okay, you've got to figure out, you're coming in at, you know, thousands of kilometers an hour, and then you've got to slow it down. So you've got to precisely fire the engines, and you've got to know exactly how much thrust you're, you know, just the calculation just, oh. And so these calculations were done using a piece of software that was written by a company called Lockheed Martin, who you may have heard of. Okay.
Now, I haven't, actually.
You haven't? Okay. No. So they're a big sort of US sort of, they're into weapons and they're into the spacecraft and, you know, planes and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, right.
So the software to calculate the thrust was written by them. And then NASA was going to use the output of that program that calculated the thrust in order to basically calculate the trajectory of, you know, where the spacecraft was going to go, okay? So they were relying on this amount of thrust so that they could then calculate the trajectory. Right, the problem was, okay, again, you're too young to remember, but in about 1975, I think New Zealand switched from imperial units to metric units.
Okay? Yeah, okay.
So you two really shouldn't know what a mile is. But no. You do, sadly.
Roughly.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't calculated. I'm always Googling it.
And
you always have to exchange on Google.
Okay, and sadly, you know, let's say, you know, births are always given in pounds and ounces still, aren't they?
Bizarre. Yeah, okay. I measure my height in, like, feet, and even though we should do centimetres.
Yeah, I know. You shouldn't know what a foot
that's
is.
That's quite weird.
And then bloody televisions, they're always, you know, 110.
I know.
You
know, I have to use, like, literally subways as my, like, concept of what is a foot long. That's so, like, I think about a sandwich every time.
Like 5 foot long TV.
So, therefore, there is potential for confusion, isn't there? Now, there's only three countries in the world that don't use imperial units, okay? Mm-hmm. So there is Myanmar, there is Liberia, and there is the United States.
Yeah.
Okay.
The big one.
So they still have the so-called imperial units, even though they passed a law saying that they were going metric.
Oh, when did they do that?
That was way back in the 70s, but they never actually enacted it.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of crazy.
Tell me about it. So, long story short, the program that Lockheed Martin used calculated the thrust in imperial units.
Right.
And the program that NASA used to calculate the trajectory using that output used SI units.
Yeah.
And that meant that the data that it got from the Lockheed Martin program was out by a factor of about 4.5.
Yeah, critical error.
Oh, yeah, a very critical error. And as a result of that, there was $300 million straight down the tubes, basically, because of a simple error with units. And
conversion.
So this, And so this shows you why units are so important and why we should just use the one set of units. We should consign feet and inches and pounds and ounces and all of that crap to the rubbish bin. Okay, excuse my French.
No, you're fine. Did anyone get, like, sued or anything? Was anyone held liable or were they like, ooh, and just kind of moved on?
No, well, I mean, they're sort of, you know, they're sort of government again, reading up on it, apparently they were very sort of forgiving to Lockheed Martin, who are sort of a private company, one of those military industrial complex companies, let's say. So, you know, they were very, very forgiving. But, you know, had there been lives at risk, had there been people on that craft.
Yeah, that would have been a different story.
You know, an absolutely different story. Oh, no. So please, everybody out there, let's forget about your inches and your feet and miles and all of that sort of nonsense, and let's go with the real things, the meter and the second and the kilogram, you know. And please, it's kilometres, people. It's not kilometres.
You say, I say kilometres.
No, you don't, because you don't say millimetres, do you? You say millimetres. Oh, you don't say millimetres. Yeah. You know. You don't say centimetres, do you?
Okay. I'm going to start
centimetres
saying
centimetres. Crazy. Yeah. That's kind of more fun.
That's actually so fun.
Kilometres. There you go. That's my lesson
that's
for the
brilliant.
Day, folks.
Yeah,
there we go.
So that's the metric system, right?
Use the metric system. There we go.
Don't 23rd be like the Americans.
23rd of September. Yeah, there you go.
Okay. We've got our next story here about chimpanzees and what they're ingesting in their fruit.
It reminds me of one of the great lines from The Simpsons where they talk about, I hate every ape I see from chimpan A to chimpan Z. It's just, that's just comic genius. Anyway.
Good one.
So the question out there is, are humans the only animals that use alcohol?
Surely not.
Yeah.
Oh, that was quick. That was quick. And indeed, the answer is you're absolutely right. Yes, yes. And so this has been further proven because there seems to have been quite a bit of work done on this sort of stuff. How do people get into this? That's what gets me, you know. They wake up one day, oh, let's investigate the effect of, you know, alcohol on, you know, animals, or see if animals use alcohol. It's, you know, sounds fascinating.
And then having
stuff.
To go pitch for that funding to go investigate.
Absolutely.
And convince the room of people.
In the Cote d'Ivoire, no less, and Uganda. Yeah, let's go all the way there because that's where obviously chimps live. So there's new work that's just come out. And again, as I say, this is from workers in the Cote d'Ivoire and France and the USA. And So you might think, well, how could they possibly use alcohol? Well, a little thing called fermentation, which is where we get our alcohol from, and that occurs naturally in sort of overripe fruit or very, very ripe fruit.
Yeah.
And so as a result of this, so chimpanzees are fruit eaters, and they eat around about, get this, about 10% of their body weight every day in fruit. Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah, that's a lot of fruit.
I mean, that makes sense with the stereotypes. I don't know.
And as a result of this, because they eat ripe fruit that has fallen from trees and has started fermenting, mm-hmm. as a result, on average, from the chimps that they studied, they reckon that a chimp would imbibe about 14 grams of pure alcohol a day.
Yeah.
And that equates to about 1.4 standard drinks. Okay. Or, and again, so chimpanzees are lighter than us, so the standard drink is based on a 70 kilogram average person, apparently. But yeah. Chimps are about 40 kgs, and so therefore that translates from the 1.4 to up to about 2 standard drinks a day. So
is that incidental, or do you reckon they're seeking out the alcohol in this,
That's a very, very good question. Mm-hmm. And I think the answer is that they're not sure. So they're thinking that it may be something to do. Okay, so alcohol is volatile, so you can certainly smell it. And so they're thinking that if you can smell it, then that will sort of lead you to where ripe fruit is, right. Maybe. So that's one of the thoughts. Sense. So that, you know, that if you can smell it, you know that food is nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they're not seeking it out per se for the buzz or whatever they get out of this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's a very, very interesting hypothesis. And
I'm seeing, like, in the future, different studies being conducted about, like, whether they are seeking it out for alcohol and, like, the risk of, like, alcoholism versus, like, mm-hmm. healthy fruit intake for chimpanzees.
Yep. And, I mean, there's no way around that, really, because, you know, that it's ripe fruit's going to ferment. So, you know, you really can't avoid it. And so as a result of this, they've now sort of posited a hypothesis and saying that maybe the fact that we like alcohol, which most of us do, so our predilection for alcohol may well have come from our primate ancestors as a result of all of this, okay? Oh,
wait, actually, that makes so much sense.
It does, yeah, well, it does. Again, it's going to be difficult to prove, I'd imagine.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, you're right, it does sort of make sense. And so the way that they did the study, and it did seem quite involved, my goodness. So they went to the Côte d'Ivoire and Uganda, so chimpanzee places there.
Mm.
And essentially they went around sort of picking up fruit and stuff like that and measuring the alcohol content in fruit and stuff and figuring all of that out. And then they needed to figure out how much alcohol the chimps were actually getting. And they could do a calculation of that from the amount in the fruit, but they wanted some sort of other evidence as well. And so apparently, and they didn't go into this in the paper, but they collected urine from chimps sleeping in trees using an umbrella. But they did not go into detail on that. So that kind of boggles the mind. I don't really... How would you extract urine from a sleeping chimpanzee?
Do they urinate when they're sleeping?
I guess they must do, I suppose, you know.
I can't imagine wanting to be the person on that study.
Yeah, no.
Unless they get their hand and put it in the bowl of warm water, you know, like the old
like a little
trick
prank.
Supposedly
chimpanzee
is, apparently.
Prank.
Yeah. Got him. Yeah.
So there you go. So it transpires that, humans are not the only animals that use alcohol. Now, whether they get the buzz out of it, whether they're doing it for the buzz or it's a side effect of their food requirements, we don't know. So
Interesting. Yeah. Our final story today is quite a relevant one for a lot of people. I know that I was quite interested to read this. It's about, it was a study about what attracts mosquitoes more to, or what kind of people are more attractive to mosquitoes, I suppose.
Yep.
And they tested this at a festival. Sorry, how about you tell us about this story? I'll just go ahead with my reading.
So, well, you know, supposedly you wouldn't believe it today, but it is coming into summer and it's, you know, festival time, and also not only festival time, but mosquito time.
Yes,
and
definitely.
We all want to keep away from them. And there has been heaps and heaps and heaps of work done on what makes people attractive to mosquitoes and or not. But, you know, there's always room for more work in this. And so as part of the 2023 Lowlands Music Festival in the Netherlands, featuring Billie Eilish. Wow.
Wonder if she got bitten. Hopefully not. Swatting her away on stage.
The music can't have been very good or something, because a whole lot of volunteers there who went and volunteered for an experiment basically to see this, whether mosquitoes were attracted to them and what factors that they had could be sort of figured out to have those mosquitoes be attracted to them, he said in his worst English sentence ever. So,
It makes sense.
So what they did, they went into a big tent. They had a whole lot of mozzies in these cages.
Nightmare. Sorry, I'm just imagining like volunteering for that. Absolutely not.
No. But the mozzies, they could smell you, but they couldn't get
out.
Yeah,
you didn't have to get bitten by
it. Okay, so you didn't have to get bitten. So you just hold your arm next to this cage and stuff like that. And then they saw whether the
mozzies
would...
That's like scarier than shark diving still. No.
So that's what they did. And then this wasn't sort of, you know, absolutely fundamental science, because it wasn't taken over the entire population. It was just a bunch of festival goers and everything like that. But what they did find, basically, if you'd been drinking beer, number one, they would go for you. Mm-hmm. If you'd been smoking dope, they'd go for you. And if you'd been sleeping next to someone, they would go for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, if you don't want mozzies, then it's like rock and roll without the sex and the drugs. Basically, that's what you have to do.
Yeah, the quote from the research study, they said, don't drink beer, don't smoke weed, don't sleep with people, and put on your sunscreen. Probably the worst advertisement for a festival I've ever heard.
And that's true.
Don't know
true.
If people like that too much.
And what they did find, yes, as you said, that the sunscreen was the one thing that would tend to keep them away.
Wouldn't they have tested like mozzie sprays as well? Surely that's similar or better effect.
Well, I think they just wanted a general to figure out, you know, what
lifestyle habits without intentional prevention. I guess.
Couldn't have put that better myself.
I'm coming for your job.
For real.
So there you go, folks. That's basically it. So if you're going to the festivals, don't do anything bad, basically, and wear your sunscreen.
Don't do drugs, kids.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's great information coming into summer this year.
Absolutely necessary information.
Yes. Absolutely. That is all of our stories today for Dear Science. Thank you so much, Alan, for joining us.
Pleasure.
Today. We've got a little special announcement from MOTAT. These school holidays, you can test your communication skills, become a pilot of the future, and see automatic tech takeoff at MOTAT.
Sounds all good.
Interesting. Maybe if you want to get down there and have a look. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, MOTAT. And as always, thank you, Science.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.